Welcome, I'm Faye Waterman, the Conversation Curator, and this is What's Your Superpower, the podcast. And my guest today is Deborah Harmon. And Deborah's background is in information technology, working for a global semiconductor company. She is an advocate for financial literacy. She became a licensed financial professional and decided to change careers almost 8 years ago. She is active in her church and community, and she is a proud grandma of 7 grandchildren. Welcome, Deborah, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Faye. It's really great to be here. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah. Now, Deborah, what we do is we talk about, or you talk about, who you are, what you do, why you do it, where you come from, a little bit of your backstory, and how you got to where you are today. So please share a little bit about your background, where you come from.
I did start out in high school working for in an office environment, and I continued on as I graduated, went to work for a global semiconductor company that was a small privately held company that eventually went public. So I was very fortunate to work there that whole time and be a part of the process, and I got to see a lot. So I worked there a long time, but I feel like I had many jobs while I was there, played many roles, and met many wonderful people. So that is a, it's a, I'm very blessed to have that be part of my life. However, as you mentioned, I'm a big advocate for financial literacy. And when I heard about this company where I could help other people to learn about their finances and take a look at maybe where they are now and where they'd like to be, I could relate to that because someone had done that for me way back when. So I went ahead and yes, I switched careers. I hadn't planned to do that, but I just felt that that was the right thing to do. So that's kind of the short story of how it all happened. In the meantime, though, my company had transferred me out to the West Coast when my children were old enough and didn't need me anymore, but then they started getting married and starting families, so I had to come back. So it was a perfect timing to break away from the corporate world and come back and manage my time a little bit differently and have time for those now 7 grandchildren aging from ages 3 to 16 years old. So they're
Wow.
Loads of fun, and they're close by, so I don't see them. They're very busy, so I don't see them that often. But we're all here in the same place when we meet each other.
Beautiful. Now, you said financial literacy. What does that actually mean?
Well, helping people understand about how money works and how to make it work for them. Starting with having a budget, having an emergency savings, having a short-term and long-term savings, things like that. We just sit down as part of what I do. I sit down and just talk with people about, what their budget is, what are their goals, what are their dreams, and how do they plan to get there? And if there's something that I can offer that will help them reach their goals sooner or with more certainty, then I can share that with them. We also teach a lot of financial concepts, like how compound interest works, or for you or against you, depending on whether you're saving or borrowing. Just things like that that people weren't taught in school. So I'm very, even though I had nothing to do with it, I'm very proud that my state, Pennsylvania, became the 25th state in the US just last December to require financial literacy in high school.
Fantastic.
That's a growing thing, yes. But I know when I went to school, we didn't have anything. You might have accounting or learning how to write in a checkbook, but not how money works. So I'm very pleased that my state became the 25th. Matter of fact, for a while, I was volunteering for an organization, I guess I can say this here, right, called Junior Achievement, where we go into schools and teach students some of the things that I just shared, that I already shared to adults in my business. We were teaching it to children through the program of Junior Achievement.
And you say how money works, and you mentioned a few things like saving for a rainy day, basically. Excuse Excuse me, I can cut that out. So saving for a rainy day, having savings for things, emergencies, and that budget. Now, I don't like the word budget, but it is a necessary thing, isn't it? We could call it something else. I'm not sure what you'd call it, but that budget is something that you put together so you can see where your money's coming from and where it's going to, how it's utilized. Is that my understanding?
Yes, I agree. And it's really everything that's coming in, income or any other means, any means of income. And then what's going out, your expenses, no matter what they are. And I love to share this with people. If you're starting to look at, well, I have just as much going out as I have coming in. So, how can I save? Well, take a look. Don't change your habits. Just take a look at the end of the month at what you may have purchased that you didn't need it, but you wanted it. And don't cut it all out. Just take half of that, half of that. After you know what it is, just take half of that and put it aside in a savings. And don't change your lifestyle and take out all the fun, but start to change your habits maybe in a small way. And that's partly what happened to me. Once I saw that I could change my habits in a small way many years ago by getting some of that guidance, then then I could see how that worked, and it may encouraged me to do a little bit more. But yes, I understand about a budget sounds so
Formal,
rigid.
yeah,
Well,
rigid.
yes. And it kind of is, but really, until you write down everything on paper and you can really see it all in one place, it's kind of tough to get a handle on it. So it can be fun. It doesn't mean we have to stop, treating ourselves to tea or coffee, for example, or going out, to dinner once in a while or something. It doesn't mean you have to stop doing things like that. It just means recognize where your money's going and make sure that's where you want it to go.
Yeah. So you also mentioned there that sometimes people have the money that comes in goes straight out, and sometimes the money that comes in isn't enough to pay for living expenses and everything else, even though, they have a constant of funds coming in. How would you manage something like that? And they're not spending anything in a little treat of coffee or anything like that because it isn't there to do that. How would you help them recognize, you said at the end of the month, you write down everything that's come in, what you've spent, what's necessary, what's not really necessary, but don't leave out something that you can treat yourself with. But what if it just isn't there? How would you do something about that?
Well, there just seems like there's always a way once you're sitting down and itemizing everything that you'll find something that's not a necessity. Maybe it's you applied for a subscription a while back and forgot about it. So it's automatic, you're automatically being billed. Maybe it's only $10 a month, but if you can get that back and contribute it to something else instead, it's kind of like redirecting what you have to the best places. So I think we can always find something. Maybe it's adjusting, maybe it's a necessary expense, but maybe there's a better way to handle it or a different way to handle it. Sometimes there are seniors who don't know they could get senior citizen discounts on things, for example, or just looking based on our experience from talking, my life experience plus talking to other people, I may be able to come up with an idea that could apply to that particular person. So, and I we might not always be able to solve every problem for every person, that's for sure. But getting people to understand the best way to do things will get them on a path to work towards something. And then staying in touch. I never just sit down with somebody one time. It's kind of a lifelong relationship because things change. Some people may be high responsibility but low finances in the beginning, and as you work with them and they grow, then you can help them make sure things are going to the right place. Some people start out with maybe they're halfway there, but they never really thought about stretching that for the rest of the way. So we can look at ways of doing that. There are different, I guess, approaches that we can look at based on our experience of working with so many different people. And I have a lot of peers who I can call on. If I'm out of ideas, I know I'll find somebody who can.
Do you find that when you're working with someone, because you've said a lot of fabulous things there, and the one thing that I will keep coming back to is that when you sit down and you look at the end of the month of all your expenses and really finding all the expenses, the ones in particular that you've actually forgotten that are being taken out, and you have actually forgotten that you can save and put into something else to support you in another area. I think that's a fantastic idea, because I think with the situation of with worldwide, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, everything is, and living expenses are very similar. And we need food, we need power, we need gas, we need water, we need, all these sorts of things. But there are things along the way that we do, and we do them for a period of time, but they sort of get lost somewhere. So you go and you help them search for everything that is being taken out of their funds. And then you can bring them back and they have that aha moment and say, wow, I'd forgotten all about that. And how, oh, I can save $10 a month here. And that $10 adds up over a 12-month period. So that's something that they could put into savings for something in particular that they wanted, that they didn't actually think they had the money for in the first place. But you've helped them find it. And there's probably other things there that you help them find, little things that they might purchase, as you said, that we always want something. We don't actually need it, but we want it, so we buy it. And we think, oh, I wish I hadn't have bought that, because then I could have paid for blah. So it makes sense.
Yeah, sometimes it's even just buying the generic version of something instead of the non-generic version. It could really be it could just be just about anything.
And yeah, looking at food and things like that. And I mean, there are lots of generics in food, and you might be able to save. It might be a few cents, it might be a dollar, it might be $2 or something like that. And looking at that, that could be that cup of coffee that you've not been able to get.
So I'll show my age here, but when my kids were small, I had two sons. When they were younger, I used to get the Sunday newspaper, and I think it cost a dollar. I don't. Let's just say it cost a dollar, maybe. It was very inexpensive, but I would get the Sunday newspaper, and then I would clip all the coupons out of it to buy all our treats, so we could still get the chips and the ice cream and things like that, because I would cut out the coupons and I'd save way more than the dollar that I spent for the newspaper. And so we didn't have to cut out our fun things. I just found ways to be able to make it happen. So
Yeah.
just talking to people about it is the first step. In my former life, in my IT job, people would come in and they'd have a technical issue, and I wasn't the most technical person. And they'd talk to me for a minute about it. And they'd realize what the answer was to their problem, and they'd say, thank you. I'd say, well, I didn't do anything, I just listened. But if sometimes when you just have that person to talk to and you hear yourself talk, you come up with your own answer. You just needed somebody who understood and listened to what you had to say. So I think that's super important.
Yeah, and I think we all have the means of solving any problem that we have. And it can be just through a conversation, like you said there, Deb. And because it's mulling over in your mind while you're having that conversation, and somebody's listening, And then they have that aha moment, which says, oh, now I know. But you needed that other person to be listening to you so that you could recognize how you can solve your own problem. And it's quite funny, isn't it, when you can see that and you think, oh, it was right in front of me all the time, but I didn't see it. And this is what we do because we get so busy doing the do that we don't have time to see how we can solve the problem ourselves. So that's where we need people like you, Deborah, to be there to listen, have some ideas, but it's the responsibility of that person. You can give them all the information and all the ideas and everything, but it's the responsibility of the person to take on board and take action to make these changes, to make it happen in their life, isn't it?
Yes, I agree. And there's no, I guess, greater satisfaction than seeing somebody taking control like that, learning, taking control, and then being proud of themselves for doing that.
Do you see the confidence grow in them? You see them come in and they're sitting down and you are having this conversation and there's this expression on their face of stress and worry. And you have this conversation with them and you're working with them. You said you don't just have one conversation with them, you have several. And then they come back and you can see the weight of that stress lifting up off their face. And they can see some light at the end of the tunnel.
That's a great way to put it. Yes.
So, give some examples of some of the people that you work with. You don't need to name them, but some of the things that people haven't actually seen, but having a conversation with you and you going through, working through the process with them, what sort of things have they found or you've shown them to find that have solved a problem for them?
Well, I'm not sure if this is exactly what you're asking, but so for example, somebody who's there was a young gentleman who wanted to save, but he didn't have a budget, and he had a limited income, but he was very responsible with his finances, and so he started putting aside just a very small amount. It wasn't time yet for him to do some big savings, but just putting aside a small amount. And he started out with a certain value the first week, and then he raised it up to a certain value the next week, and then raised it up a little bit more. And I'm sure he kept going. I haven't talked to him for a while, but I'm sure he kept going as he saw that he could do it and built confidence in himself. He just started going a little bit further. And it would have been so overwhelming for him to just start out with a big amount at one time. It's taking a little step, like a little improvement each week or each day or each week, can help us to not feel overwhelmed when we're making a change. And there are also some, on the flip side, a lot of what we do is protection, making sure that people know what's available to them before they need it, because the time to protect yourself is before, when you can, is before you need it. So sitting down with someone and helping them to understand, again, sometimes people think it's really complicated, and maybe it can be, but it's really, they're just some general, I guess, points that people need to understand so they know if that's something that they want to pursue. So when we're talking about different solutions that people can have, making sure that they understand what it would do for them in particular is super important. And once they do, then it becomes, going back to what you said earlier, becomes then they own that solution. I was just the person to make sure they knew about it. They own that solution. And I don't know the, I guess the right way to say it, but then it just, you know that they're going to be okay. We still stay in touch, but you know they're going to be okay because now it's become part of what they do, not part of what someone else told them to do. Does that make
Yeah.
sense?
And I don't think anyone needs someone to tell them what to do because it's not about telling them. It's about showing them and advising them and giving them something to see and work towards. It's not about, you must do this, you must do that. These are your options. You choose. And you can get there faster if you do it this way, you can get a little slower if you do it this way. And it's, you can put $2 away a week, which will build up. Everything grows if you add to it. Looking at, and I'm not the expert in this area, I think I'm probably one of the worst. I don't like budgets, and I do my due diligence most of the time. Sometimes I fall off. But it's about having control over what you do. And it's someone else like you, Deborah, that helps them take back that control of their life, the financial side of their life, which gives them the opportunity to do other things in their life that they weren't able to do. So you're an integral part of the cog in the wheel for them to be able to grow and become and do what they want to do in their life.
And thank you. And again, we all can relate to that, I believe, because we were taught some things in school, but not very much. Not everything that we needed to know about managing our own household when we had to. My grandchildren all 1 year for Christmas got a bank from me. And it was three parts. Each one was different, but what they had in common, three things: save, spend, and share. And then I gave them some paper money, which is rare these days, right? But I gave them paper money, all the same amount, but in separate bills, and just observed who put it. I kind of predicted, but who would put most in share, who would put most in spend, and who would put most in save. And so it was really fun to watch those different money personalities. And by the way, it's all boys except for one girl. So and all ages, and so it was really interesting to see it, because it was totally up to them. And we had a little talk, and the older ones, I still I talk with them more seriously than the younger ones, of course, but it was really interesting to see who put it in share, who put it in spend, and who put it in save.
And what a good thing to teach them because, as you say, this isn't taught in schools and it's a really important component of our life. We go from school out into the big wide world and we've not been taught these things unless you have savvy parents or someone that they look up to be inspired to do their budget or to save, spend, share, all those sorts of things. We're not taught a lot of things in school to prepare us for life outside school. Even university students, they're not really prepared to go out into the big wide world. Maybe you pay a fortune for a university degree these days, and it's here in Australia they call it HECS, and you can have it on the back burner. You don't pay for it while you're going to uni, but when you get a job, you actually pay for it. Out of your income until you've paid it. So depending on the fee itself, how long it takes to pay that uni degree fee back. And it could be a lot of money, a lot of money. Once upon a time, I remember when uni was free. No more free. Oh, yes, it was. Here in Australia, you could go to university many years ago for free, not anymore, which is quite interesting. And there are a lot of older people that have been to university that never had to pay for their degree. What else do you do for people, Deborah? It's not just you looking at their finances and showing them and sharing ways they can do things. What else do you see What sort of results do you see in people after you've worked with them for a period of time? Do they come back to you and say, thank you for showing me or sharing that with me, because it's given me the confidence now to be able to go and do whatever it is. Share a little bit about the things that people have come back and spoken to you about.
Well, I appreciate that. And 8 years is really not a long time to be in this industry if you think about it, right? Part of it was the learning process, and I was already advised by a very smart person when I said I was changing careers that my first couple of years would be just getting into it and getting learning years, and that was absolutely correct. But it was I just have loved every minute of it. What I love is if somebody they will refer a family member, especially because that means that they have found value and they trust you. So I think that's the biggest, we like to know that somebody's feeling positive about their finances or about their situation. But I think it's especially important when somebody sends a friend, a business associate, or a family member to talk with you. Because, if they say, well, my daughter really needs to talk with you because she won't listen to me, but she might listen to you, something like that, then I love that. So I really appreciate those kind of discussions.
What's the oldest person that you've worked with so far?
I'm going to interject something. My mom is not a client of mine, but she is a retiree and she's now 92 years old. And she, for a while, worked a job and had a savings, and that savings then became her retirement fund. But I observed through her that her employer, who was really great, but employers often don't tell you everything about what's going to happen once you leave that company. And since I want to help people be in a good position to retire, I like chatting with her and following her and making sure she's getting the best advice that she can for her situation, so that I can pass it on to others. I've learned that a lot of times people learn from experience, whether it's the two situations that are really, I guess, big today are people who are retired. They're trying to stretch those retirement dollars. People are living longer, want to make sure either their savings last or they have strategies to make sure of that. But also, people aren't always living healthier. And so there's a big need for long-term care strategy as well. That's a whole other topic, but I know through my family situation, I've learned some things that I like to pass along to people. So my mom isn't, I don't work with her, but I do deal with her financial situation. So it's interesting that you would say that because I'm actually looking right now for some people who are also around that age to hear how their experience has been and what they've learned and what they would do differently. So I can take that to people a little younger than me, not much, but a little younger than me, and apply it, learn from someone else's experience and apply it now in terms of finance and other things. Just apply it now so that I guess we could say you learn from other people's mistakes.
Working with your mum and seeing her situation, you can reflect that back on someone who's about to retire, looking at their financial situation, and even, that have a certain amount of money to retire on. So how to use that better so that you don't have to constantly worry, oh, I can't spend that because I've got to stretch it out for this. So you can give them ideas of how they can manage their money better to last longer but still enjoy life.
Yes, because there are two parts to that. There's the numbers part, the logical part, and then there's the emotional part. And I really believe when people have worked hard their whole life, they need to be comfortable and enjoy their later years as well. So There's really two parts, and I guess I need to be more looking out for the logical part, but I can't help but also appreciate the emotional part of that. It, yes, it'd be really great if your money lasts you till you're 100, but not if you're not having fun, too, at the same time.
And the emotional part is usually the part that's the most stressed area of people. You know, if they're not in a good financial situation, then the emotion is high. The intelligence is low because they can't really see what they need to see in that financial situation to solve that problem. But when they have a conversation with you, that emotion comes down. They see the logic in what they need to do because you can sit there and show them. And as you said earlier, you don't tell them what to do. You advise them, you give them a strategy, but it's their responsibility to do it. It's not
It
your
is.
responsibility unless
It is.
you're managing the actual funds that they have. Then it's their responsibility to take control of it. So,
Right.
you know,
Yeah.
what's the youngest person you've worked with?
30? 30
30?
years old?
Okay. And what sort of situation were they in?
Self-employed. Had some savings from some previous employment. We're looking for trying to decide what was the best thing to do with it. So, and I just would like to add, I don't come up with this all by myself. I have a lot of training, licensed training, but also training from the company on considerations for seniors or, how to work with different age levels or situations. So, I'm following what my company is has in place to work with people. So, but I also can apply my experience and my learnings to add in there as well. But there's a lot of good information and training available to the people with the license to recognize certain situations and to make sure that we're doing the right thing for people. So yeah, this young there's that aspect, but this young person, yeah, was just looking, had worked a couple of different jobs and had some savings and had some debt, and we were looking at, all right, well, what's the best thing to do in this situation? And we did come up with a plan that he was happy with. And work for him. And I guess that was needed, or else he wouldn't have left these pockets of money around because he just didn't know what to do with it or who to ask.
And you've got to find someone that you trust, don't you? To because that's your livelihood, your finances. And you have to trust the person that you're working with that's going to do due diligence for you to make it your life easier financially.
Yes, there's a lot of compliance and so forth to make sure that we to help make sure that we are doing the right thing for people.
Who would be a good choice for you? What age group would you really love to work with to create that fund so that they can see, you know, you've got your retirees, you've got the younger people, you've got the people that are working hard in the middle. But who would you really love to work with to show them that they could have a really good lifestyle at any age?
Well, that is a really hard question to answer because all the groups that you mentioned are appealing in some way. There's a special need. But I guess I would say people between maybe the ages of 30 and 40, because they're so busy just trying to, they're out of school, probably still paying off some student loans, starting a family, maybe purchasing a home, maybe they need a car for work. They probably still do go to the office. They have a lot of expenses and things, and to just help them with that word budget, but to help them take a look at what's coming in, what's going out, so that they can be in a position to start saving because it's very time is very important. The sooner you start saving, the better, right? The sooner you get things going, even if it's just a little bit. But once you start to develop that habit and you can build on it, and then say they get a bonus at work or a promotion or something, instead of saying, oh, we'll get, we'll go on vacation, they can celebrate, but maybe that's when they save a little more. So working with somebody on that road, on that journey of when they're just starting out, just hit with a bunch of responsibilities. Well, I'll share one more story kind of like that. But they're just learning all the things that they're really responsible for. When I first got married and we ha owned a house and the school tax bill came in the mail and I was throwing it out and my husband said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "We don't have kids in school. We don't have to pay this." He said, "Everybody has to pay school tax." I said, "What? Why do I have to pay school tax? I don't have kids in school." I didn't know that. So I learned along the way that there are certain things homeowners are responsible for, right? Or residents. But people just, they're not taught things like that. So getting with a young family, maybe 30, between 30 and 40 years old, and just getting everything orderly so that they have a roadmap for saving for their future is important. The sooner the better. I guess if I had to pick any group, it would be that group. And it would be getting a budget, but not a strict budget so that they're not able to do little things with their family. Just something that will also account for their future, because if somebody doesn't encourage them to do that, they'll just keep, like I did for a while, keep putting it off until later, until someone sat down with me and offered me a free consultation. And I felt so guilty saying yes because I knew I couldn't save any money. And he looked at everything and kind of rearranged a little bit. And I was able to start a savings. And once I saw I could do that, I did a little more. It wasn't overwhelming. And that's the age, I was in that age range at the time. So I really am responsible for two growing boys. And I thought it was impossible. I'd never be able to do that. And he showed me how. And so being able to do that for other people in that same age range, I guess, would be maybe the most rewarding, but it's all good. It's every different group is, there are rewards in all of them, and I have a way to help them in some way.
And I want to ask you another question there, Deborah. Do you ever work with women who have raised their family, lived with their other half, and then decided around 50 or 60 that they want to live on their own, but the finances aren't there? Some of those women end up on the street because they don't have a home and all that sort of stuff. Have you ever worked with anyone like that to get them to see that they can have a home and do the things that they need to do?
We do special events for women and finance because women are typically, even if they have a partner, typically not the ones who handle the finances. Just because they're busy doing other things. It's not that they can't handle them, but everybody gets a role, and usually it's the husband who handles the finances, and so women tend to live outlive their husband, or as you say, sometimes they're separated from them. And I have some experience with that myself. And so learning how to manage everything on your own is difficult. You also start finding out along the way. So we do events for women that talk about the various aspects of finances, including taking care of their health in their later years, going back to that long-term care, because what's the statistic? People who are turning 65 right now, statistically, one of those people will live to be 92, I think it is. And typically the women outlive the men. So whether however you're separated from your partner, if you're a female, you probably won't even know where all the bank accounts are. Or if you do, you won't know who to talk with about it. So that is another group that's near and dear to me, is helping women make sure at least they understand what's happening in their relationship or how to take care of themselves if they're on their own, so that they don't run into that situation where they're, yeah, where they're not financially independent or capable.
Here in Australia, there's a lot of women that, have not managed their finances, don't know how to manage their finances, and they find themselves in a situation where they've got no home, they don't know what to do, they're living in their car or living on the street or whatever. And I think, young girls need to be taught finances so that they can go through life. I think when you're living with somebody, you either have a partner, you're married to them, you need to be financially independent if something happens. And that's like having your savings. Each of each the partners need to have this so that if anything happens and they separate, or when they separate, that they can manage to live comfortably. And that's the responsibility of each individual. But it's also the communication between the two of them to say, well, we put this into the fund to work together with, and I put this into my fund to do the things that I want to do with it. And that can be saving, it could be spending and having a few different things that you don't feel guilty about buying.
It's great that you mentioned that, because it's true. When you're entering into a relationship, whether it's even a roommate in college or a spouse or whatever the situation is, it's always good to have a talk about money beforehand. Even if it is, you're a romantic relationship and you're getting married, talking about finances, just to understand each other's money personalities. Are you a spender? Are you a saver? And then learning how to work together. And I love your example of you either may have two separate accounts or one account, but you agree on how you give the other person a little bit of that to do whatever they want with without judgment, right? So that whatever it is, it might just be to go out to lunch once a week, or it may be a new pair of shoes. It's whatever's important to that person, but some portion of that, of what they have, they should be able to use without any judgment, however they want to use it. Yeah, there's not, there has to be that kind of respect for each other in any relationship.
I think so, but it's not taught. It has to be learned. It needs to be taught in schools because, you can grow up in a family where finances are the bugbear of the family. And it's the issue, it's the problem, and therefore, both female and male, the children need to be taught finances so that they have control. And then if they partner up with someone, they have that conversation, as you say, to understand what that person's like with money, whether they're a saver or a spender, a waster, whatever it might be, so that you're prepared and know what you need to do to save yourself. So, what advice, Deborah, would you give to anyone that's listening about finance? And I know I said earlier that I don't like the word budget. We could change it to something else, I don't know. But it is a budget. You look at your finances, you put it all together, and you see where your money's going and all that sort of thing. What sort of advice, a couple of tips that you could give anyone listening to change the way they look at finances so that they can have a better life?
I really believe that it starts with keeping track of your income and expenses. Now, there are also some apps. I can't recommend any, but there are even apps that you can use to do that. But everything, I'm just going to say on paper, meaning written down somewhere in an app, on a spreadsheet, to write it down on a piece of paper, whatever it is, track what is coming in and going out, because that can be an eye opener. And then you may not change anything, but at least you're looking at how things really are. So I guess that would be one thing. And I really do encourage people, you can speak with financial professionals complimentary without any obligation. You can, and you there, you don't have to divulge a lot of information. But if you have a question about something, there are financial professionals who will be more than happy to speak with someone and answer that question. So don't be shy, I guess, to reach out to somebody who's in that profession. Just like if my foot hurt all day and I was sitting next to a doctor at coffee, I'd ask them, a question or whatever, right? Or if I had a toothache, I'm not gonna like Google how to fix my tooth. I'm gonna go to the dentist. So if you have a question about finances, don't be shy. Reach out to a financial professional to ask that question. There are a lot of people, a lot of us who we don't charge for that. It's complimentary. We're more than happy to answer your question. But really, going back to the what I'll call the budget, we'll have to come up with a good name for that because I understand what you're saying. But to put everything in on paper, whether it's an app or whatever you prefer, to see it in one place is really the beginning of getting a control on it for yourself.
Beautiful. Thank you, Deborah. Thank you for your wealth of knowledge. There's a lot of amazing information in our conversation. So thank you very much. I'm Faye Waterman. This has been Watch Your Superpower, the podcast, and we'll be back again soon. Bye for now.